This is an alert. Please stand by for an important situational awareness report from Civil Defense Radio. Again, this is an alert. Important information to follow. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, I'm Preston Schlankhofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. Well, today we bring you a lot of information. There's so many things going out there. It's almost like we have to get with you guys on an hourly basis just to give you an update of what's going on, but that's basically impossible. So we're going to try and hit this hard. I want to introduce our new long-term co-host, Matthew West. Say hi, Matt.
Hello, everybody. Great to be on the show. As always enjoy being on Civil Defense Radio with Preston. It's always good information, and we want to make sure that we want to get this information out as quickly as we can, as accurately as we can, and as research-based as we can.
Yes, and there's a lot of sources out there for all kinds of information, but we're going to try and continue our high standard of bringing you fact, not fiction, and we're also going to not be politically correct, because that doesn't do you any good. You're already getting misinformed by a lot of the major media, so why should we be just like them? You can just listen to the news and be entertained by them instead of us. So we're not going to be pulling any punches. You know, I've been in law enforcement a long time. I analyze things. Matter of fact, I have been an analyst. I went through analyst training, and I mentioned before on one of the podcasts that I spent a little bit of time as an analyst on a psychological operations team in the Army Reserve. And so I have a little bit of experience understanding how misinformation works and also how the analytical process works. And I use that on a regular basis when I look at the threats, when I look at information coming across. And I try not to let my own political bias cloud my judgment, but there is just an overwhelming amount of information that sits on one side of the fence as the perpetrators of what is going on here. And I'm not going to hold back. And one thing that I like about Matthew is he doesn't hold back either. Right, Matt?
That's right. And, you know, we have a duty to tell the truth.
Yeah.
People need to know what's going on in this world, in the United States. Again, politics, media, misinformation, or as I say, half-truths. You know, they may not be telling you a bald-faced lie, although some of them are. But at any rate, most of the media outlets, major media outlets, are telling you half-truths. They're manipulating the story. They're manipulating the narrative according to their advertiser or whoever it is that's funding them. Whoever they have in their back pocket is how the news is going to read.
What we're going to do today is we're going to be analyzing the threat that we're facing, pretty much a civil unrest. And that'll be the theme for this, because there's a lot of information. I got a stack of stuff here that is just unbelievable. And I'm sure that Matthew's got a stack just as tall as I've got here. So Matthew, why don't you go ahead and lead off with your stuff that you shared with me earlier.
Thank you, Preston. And for those of y'all that don't know my background, haven't joined me before on when I've been a guest on the show, I also have a 20-year law enforcement background, as well as risk management and a Homeland Security background. I have my master's in Homeland Security. I've been on the EMP, Electromagnetic Defense Task Force. Last one I was at was the one at Maxwell Air Force Base. So made a lot of great contacts. But one thing was kind of an overarching theme is no matter what happens, whether it's an EMP, a grid down situation, a flood, a hurricane, whatever the case may be, whether it's localized or nationwide, there's going to be some form of civil unrest. And this is something that we've seen time in, time out, natural mm-hmm. disasters, looting. But what we're seeing now is kind of something we haven't seen in a long, long time. Probably the closest thing to anyone's lifetime of seeing the type of civil unrest that we're seeing now happened in the 60s and 70s during the civil rights protests, during the Vietnam War protests. So we're kind of coming full circle on that. And we're going to get into a little bit more about the dynamics and what's triggering these and what our short-term and our long-term future may look like with all this. The other part of me, what I look at, again, as a risk manager, is I'm trying to look at every avenue, number one, to protect myself, to protect my family and all my assets. That's what risk management is. We do it every day without even thinking about it. And so we want to see what we can do to mitigate those risks. And while I was doing some of the research, saw a couple of headlines come up. One, there's a company called Varick Maplecroft, and they do a risk index and analysis of civil unrest around the world. Their clients use it. For example, if I'm an oil company and, you know, I've got oil wells in Saudi Arabia or Africa or Venezuela, wherever the case may be, you know, this company has analysts that goes in, looks at risk assets and says, okay, this is a volatile country. These are things you may need to prepare for. What caught me was the headline that talked about how the United States has been downgraded to a high risk category. And this is something that we've always been since the first quarter of 2018, according to Varick Maplecroft, that we have been kind of in the low to medium risk range, meaning that, yeah, there's a chance for some sort of civil unrest. And again, it may be some of those categories, natural disasters, some localized civil unrest due to political issues. But by and far, it's been pretty well status quo. It's been flatlined for a long time until you get to the second quarter of 2020 when a certain virus from China came over and we saw our economy go down, our economy tank. And then we also saw people lose their minds. You know, people were losing jobs. The economy was going down. You know, you had a lot of these states that their governors were giving statewide stay-at-home orders. They were shutting the economy down. And, you know, just like kids, you know, you start getting idle minds, they're going to start getting into mischief. And this is what we're seeing. And, you know, this was a perfect time for groups like Antifa and all your organizations that live for civil unrest, you know, the agitators. This is something that they've been looking for. This was their moment of opportunity. And I think that this was somewhat planned. They knew this was coming. Some of the politicians that are in their back pocket, or they're in their back pocket, whichever way you look at it, they knew this was brewing and they realized this was a perfect time. You have a president that the left absolutely hates. There's, you know, there's no secret that the Democrats and the socialists are doing everything they can to take over the government, not just the presidency, but as much of the government as they can. And because of all this, we're seeing this increase in civil unrest. I mean, how many days are we going in Portland now?
Oh, I don't even, I've lost count. It's over 100.
Way over 100.
Yeah.
How does a city, how does a state allow a city to have violent riots, have agitators, chaos in the streets for well over 100 days in a row?
They allow it because they're fellow travelers of the same ideology that the Antifa and BLM activists have. So they're all part of it. There's an article in the Washington Times dated June 3rd, 2020. And its headline is "Exclusive: Antifa Planned Anti-Government Insurgency for Months, Law Enforcement Officials Say." Now, there's quite a few things with this.
Now, Preston, remember, according to Biden, Antifa is just an ideology.
Well,
it's just a
dream.
He can
say whatever he wants. I know better.
And you and I both know better on that.
I'll be proving it here in just a little bit. But Kenneth Graffenried, who was Deputy National Counterintelligence Executive during the George W. Bush administration, said the FBI has not been engaged in effective domestic counterintelligence for years. They've been distracted or politically corrupted. So that's why Antifa was able to hit us without the government knowing. But Richard Higgins from unconstrainedanalytics.org, there's a lot of great stuff there. Matter of fact, my first special report, Internal Threats Insurgency, was done on one of their reports, which is Remembering the Unremembered Left. And just go back to that episode back in July, and you'll be able to get informed on what that has to say. But it pretty much lines out in, I think it was like 368-page document that goes deeply into what's going on in this country. But let me just read something that I printed off from their page on this. Antifa planned anti-government insurgency for months, law enforcement official says. Rich Higgins, an irregular warfare expert and former National Security Council staff member, was interviewed for this article by the Washington Times. His quotes are, Antifa's actions represent a hard break with the long tradition of a peaceful political process in the United States. Their Marxist ideology seeks not only to influence elections in the short term, but to destroy the use of elections as the determining factor in political legitimacy. Now, there's some politicians out there on the left that are saying that the Electoral College needs to be abolished, and that's in line with what this quote is. Okay, another quote, Antifa's goal is nothing less than fomenting revolution, civil war, and silencing America's anti-communists. Their labeling of Trump supporters and patriots as Nazis and racists is standard fare for left-wing communist groups. That's their tactic. They marginalize their enemies. And Saul Alinsky was the guy who wrote the rules for radicals, and they're following that playbook. The ideology of Antifa is at its center, Marxism-Leninism. Antifa is currently functioning as the command and control of the riots, which are themselves an overt utilization of targeted violence against targets such as stores for capitalism, monuments for history, and churches for God. So they're against capitalism, our history, which signifies the justness of this nation, and God we were founded by. Antifa has been operating relatively unimpeded by law enforcement in recent years, despite its use of violence, and many analysts credit the movement's support and sympathy from the liberal left of American political and media establishments. So there it is in a nutshell. The guys at Unconstrained Analytics has made that bold statement. Anyway, that's just one off the stack of stuff we've got here at the Civil Defense Radio bunker in the heart of America. So this is planned. They've been waiting for it. And it is something that our side doesn't think about because we're not thinking of revolution. Although at times I think that the people in power have been told about things. And in the past they have said, oh, we don't have to worry about that. Well, we see how that gets us when we have people like Comey and Strzok and Page and all those people conducting illegal acts in the higher offices of the FBI and the Justice Department. So,
you know, Preston, there's people out there that have said prior to 9/11 that, you know, what are the chances of a foreign terrorist attack on American soil?
Yeah.
And we knew the intel was out there, but what did some people in the government decide to do? Ignore it. Or just they didn't collaborate with one another, and they pushed it off. Yeah. And I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing here. I'm a trained investigator. You're a trained investigator. Observation is part of what we do. You look at what Antifa's tactics were 10 years ago compared to now and how organized they're getting. Before, yeah, that's right, funding. They're getting a lot more funding, getting a lot more organized. There was, a couple of weeks ago, the video of the U-Haul truck.
Well, that was just this last week.
Okay.
This week, yeah.
Yeah. And then in Chicago, when they were throwing the projectiles at the police officers at the monument, you know, they had drone footage of people going out there and purposely dropping frozen water bottles.
Yeah.
The Chicago police got up and had a press briefing and said, look, this is how organized this is that they're creating these banners. Mm-hmm. They're creating these signs, not only to use as improvised weapons, but as somewhat hardened shields. You know, Antifa's in a lot of those left-wing terrorist organizations, domestic terrorist organizations. You know, a lot of them were some of the wildlife people, the tree huggers. You know, they did more damage than they did good for their cause. But some of the violent acts they did were limited violence.
Yeah.
You know, it was more of a, we're going to sit down, chain ourselves together, and you got to move us.
Right.
Or throw the occasional Molotov cocktail and get other people riled up. Well, they're still getting people riled up, but now they're providing, or their associates are providing, weapons, training. You know, this is something that is escalating so very quickly that if we don't get a handle on it, and I'm afraid we're not going to get a handle on it before it's too late. You know, going back to the risk index I was talking about, how we're now up in the high range. Looking at the another graph, which I'll have on the show after I get done editing here, it's showing that we are in the same risk category as Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes. Parts of Egypt. And when you look at this graph, it shows that most of the Americas, North and South America, is now falling within the high risk category. Like I said, Egypt's in there. Peru, Russia is actually scoring a lower risk than the United States is. Now, our recovery capacity as of right now is a lot higher. We're a lot better equipped to recover if we act now. But this could quickly change and bump us up toward the top. Some of the other countries, South Africa is still, even though they're a little bit higher on the bracket, they are still in the same bracket as the United States mm-hmm. when it comes to what our average forecast civil unrest index score is. Mm-hmm. And again, this comes from Versic Maplecroft, you know, this is this year, 2020. In fact, this particular graph I'm looking at was published July 17th, 2020, on the online magazine Treasury and Risk .com. So again, another financial risk management publication. And they're talking about, you know, yeah, this is something we really need to be careful of. But I think one of the most concerning things when I was doing some of this research for the show is when I came across the Washington Post, out of all publications, anyone that has read the Washington Post, if you've got your head above sand, knows that they lean extremely far to the left.
Yeah.
And this article I was reading, it was to the point where I wasn't going to read it anymore because it was so far to the left. It was like, there's no point doing it. But what caught me was the headlines that says the U.S. shows all the signs of a country spiraling toward political violence. And that caught my attention. And way down on the bottom of the article, Rachel Kleinfeld is the author of the article. And it was a September 11th, 2020 article. And again, titled, "The U.S. Shows All the Signs of a Country Spiraling Toward Political Violence." So even the left sees it. And she states in there that the United States may be returning to the state it was during the 1960s and 1970s, another time of great social unrest with anti-war protests commingled with racial tensions from the civil rights movement. So as I kept digging more and more, doing research, and again, and those listening, if you're listening to our podcast, that means that you're doing your research. You're trying to find the truth. Mm-hmm. Tell your friends, tell your family, especially if, I don't care if they lean way to the left or way to the right, they need to make sure to do all their research. Don't just look at one source of news. Just don't look at one source of publications. Try to vary it up. As much as I dislike CNN, I go to CNN because I want to see what side of the story they're telling, because they're pushing this in the schools. CNN One is in all the schools. So I want to know what my kids are learning,
right?
And what their friends are being taught in school, just being pushed through the media. So going through, I came across a June 2020 article from ABC Australia. Now, keep in mind, you know, we're talking about a continent literally on the other side of the world from us.
Yeah.
And their eyes are on us. A June 2020 article from ABC Australia that's titled "The Model Forecast the U.S.'s Current Unrest a Decade Ago, It Now Says Civil War." So what this article talks about is during the Clinton administration, and, you know, we're talking 20 some odd years ago when Bill Clinton was president, they hired a sociologist by the name of Jack Goldstone, and he was appointed to study how other states and countries fail. So they're looking at the, you know, world politics, the geopolitical world out there, and this sociologist, Mr. Goldstone, he was trying to figure out how other countries fail. Being a PSYOPs guy, you could probably relate of what they're probably use that information for. But the study wasn't about the United States, but he got together with a man named Peter Turchin, who's a mathematical modeling expert. And they ran some numbers, they crunched numbers just to see what the United States was doing. And here's something that really caught my eye. So it starts out 1780 in the early Republic. So back when our founding fathers got our Republic going, they have it labeled as the era of good feelings. Now you start heading toward the 1840s and 1850s. And there's a line that all of a sudden the era of good feelings is no longer any good feelings anymore.
Wow.
There's another line that starts pointing northward, and it is labeled as the American Civil War. And as they labeled it on this graph, they call it the Age of Discord One. So it peaks at the Civil War. The blue line continues to go downward until you get to about 1900. Shortly after World War One, we start going back into another peak. World War Two, when after we win the war, we get back the post-war prosperity. We call that the era of good feelings too, or that's what Goldstone and Turchin had named it, was the era of good feelings too. Now, once again, I'm going to emphasize that this model was created in 1990. So they're showing that starting in 1960, we hit another peak. And again, we talked about 1960s, that's when the race riots started.
Yeah.
That's when the anti-war sentiment started. So we're starting to see this post-war prosperity starting to head southward. We get to about 2001, and we see that red line, the same red line we saw creeping upward steadily during the Civil War. We start seeing that line rise starting about 2001, 2002. If you look at the model, you're going to see that they have it marked for 2020 with the question mark on it, and it's labeled the Age of Discord 2. So even using mathematical models, they predicted that we are looking, if not a civil war, some major civil unrest in the United States in the year 2020, and here we are. I saw this and it really shocked me, because we talked about civil war. There's a lot of people that talk about, well, this could trigger a civil war. Then you had other people, no, you know, yes, it's going to be times of major civil unrest, but, you know, we're the United States. You know, we're never going to be divided again. After the Civil War, it'll never happen again. We learned our lesson. And, you know, I think we're heading on a path that, unfortunately, Goldstone may have accurately predicted 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and it's something to be very concerned of, especially if you have children and grandchildren. You know, some people thought, well, this isn't going to happen for another 30, 40 years. You know, yes, it's going to be my children's problem. It's going to be my grandchildren's problem, but it's not going to be my problem. Well, guess what? It is your problem. It is our problem. And it's something that we need to start taking care of immediately, before it spirals out of control. The author of the ABC article, the online article, goes by the last name of Pertl or Pertil. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. But it quotes Goldstone as saying, you know, this collapse happens slowly and then very suddenly. So this kind of goes back to what I was talking about Antifa and how their model was. They just kept kind of chipping away at everything. And then all of a sudden we're seeing this gush coming towards you. And I like to, I'm an analogy guy. I love analogies. Put this in perspective of, think of this as an earthen dam. Okay. If you've got an earthen dam that's holding back a large body of water, as long as it's maintained, you have a good spillway, you have good land management, you're keeping everything good, you're keeping the gophers out, the nutria out, you know, right. the vermin that dig the holes in there, mm-hmm. that will start causing leaks. Well, guess what? These vermin are starting getting in our earthen dam that's holding up America right now. Well, now you start adding in the media, the politicians, and the extremist groups, and they're starting to chip away at that dam little by little. You know, the gophers are getting in the base of the dam there and digging holes. So now we throw the riots in there. Again, Portland, over 100 nights straight of major riots. And these are not little, what I would call civil unrest. These are not people just shouting and throwing bricks and stuff. I mean, these are burning down buildings, hurting people.
They're attacking them.
Yes, they're attacking them. And for why? Mm-hmm. Because it's a psychological game.
Yeah, yeah. It's to instill fear in the population to keep them from going into certain areas. And it, you know, it's going to spread. It's not going to be contained in the areas that it is now. Matter of fact, they're already planning on doing more outside of the cities in the suburbs and rural areas. They've taken a couple jaunts out into the hinterland, so to speak, and they were met with stiff resistance in some small towns, and they turned around and went the other way. Well, remember the bike rally up in Sturgis, you know, there were like seven of them that showed up there. I mean,
I gotta give them credit. They
yeah. Yeah. But I've been following this Civil War thread for quite a while. I wasn't planning on talking about it on tonight's show, so I only have one of the articles in here, but it was associated with this basic topic of civil unrest. But it's from the American Liberty Report dated what's the date? Early September, I think it's the 2nd. I didn't get the date on here, but like it or not, Civil War II has begun in America. They've shot and beat up and attacked people on the right since last election in 2016. They were harassing Trump supporters back then. They're doing the same thing now. But now they've taken it a step further than they did in 2016, and they're doing these street riots and Occupy Seattle and the Chaz or whatever they call it. And so that's part of the communist strategy, is to seize land. And that's what the fellow travelers in Oregon, in the state and city of Portland, which again is my boyhood home, that's what those government officials are allowing, because they're all on the same side. In Richmond, here in Virginia, we've got the same problem. We've got a governor and a mayor in the city of Richmond who are sympathetic to these people. Why? Because it creates a political advantage for them. All across America, there are rules that are being changed for this election. And it's designed to do one thing. Well, actually, I'll say two things. One, it's to take the advantage away from the overwhelming support that you can easily see of Trump supporters for President Trump in all his rallies. You see any gathering for for the Democrats, and it's like they can hardly get anybody there, especially Joe Biden. I mean, I think the biggest crowd I've seen was probably a couple dozen. That doesn't bode well for them. So I think their internal polling has told them that winning the election fairly is not something that's going to happen. So matter of fact, they had a junta with a bunch of people, and the Hillary's right-hand man, John Podesta, helped the party run through several war game scenarios recently in which a room full of Democrat big thinkers role-played the 2020 election. Podesta portrayed Joe Biden in the games, so he presumably napped a lot. But when Donald Trump won the election, California and Wisconsin refused to certify the results, and Podesta, or Biden, refused to concede the election, which Hillary's already told Biden, don't concede for any reason. So at that point, everyone waited to see what the military would do. First of all, the Democrats don't sound like a party that is confident that it has a chance of winning in November. No, they don't. They don't. Part of what's going on is they know they can't win, so they're gonna burn the damn thing down. To paraphrase the war cry of a BLM activist, I think it was in New York, and so they're planning on raising hell.
Oh yeah, you think the whole mail-in ballot fiasco? You think that wasn't pre-planned?
Well, they want to have America just like California, which is one party rule, the Democrats.
Yes.
And the Democrats took control of that state pretty much through mail-in balloting and ballot harvesting.
Absolutely. This is completely pre-planned, pre-organized, ready to go. I mean, they are just waiting for November to come around, and we're going to see cities light up, and not in a good way.
Well, leading up to the election and after, especially after Trump wins and he takes control of the airwaves and announces it over the emergency broadcast system, that's really going to set him off. But there's plans already by the left to raise holy hell. And let me just go through a few headlines here. Okay. Western Journal. Trump issues warning to Iran amid reports of planned attack against the U.S. That's something that is not off the table. Is China, Iran, or some other actor getting involved to sway the election because of attacks against the homeland? The Coming Coup by Michael Anton. This is from the American Mind magazine, and it's got a lot of great stuff in there. And I'm going by chronological order here. This one is June 4th. Evidence that Antifa foreign actors involved in sowing unrest and violence, according to AG Barr. That was back in June 4th. There's a lot of stuff there. And Capstone Report, analysis, New York Times hints at left's coup if Trump wins the November election. There's a lot of stuff in this. But in that scenario that I talked about earlier, where they game the system to see what would happen, in that scenario, California, Oregon, and Washington then threatened to secede from the United States if Trump took office as planned. The House named Mr. Biden president. The Senate and White House stuck with Mr. Trump. At that point in the scenario, the nation stopped looking to the media for cures and waited to see what the military would do. So you think that we have a hard time right now, you haven't seen nothing yet. I think people really need to get their things in order, get some cash, get some gold, silver, whatever. They need to have a lot of food. They need to have water. They need to have all kinds of things, because this is going to happen when winter is just starting to kick off. And this is going to be a cold year, because we just switched into another solar cycle. We hit the bottom of our solar minimum and we're going towards the solar maximum, and it's 11 year cycle. So there's going to be a lot of strange weather happening. But
And you're right. We're hitting a cold period, and not just literally, but figuratively too.
Yeah.
So, and this is where we want to talk about on the show about, you know, the chances of you finding yourself in the middle of some kind of riot or some kind of major civil unrest is going to grow exponentially. And that's what that report I read at the beginning of the show talked about, when they upped our risk index and put us as a more dangerous nation. You know, the Americas in general, again, from the bottom of South America up through Canada, they're saying that our risk of civil unrest and rioting is going to grow. And when I go back to the chart here, you know, this doesn't stop. This goes on through like 2023. So this isn't just an overnight cure. This is something that this may end up being the new norm. So let's talk about a little bit what to do if you unexpectedly find yourself in a riot and civil unrest. First of all, situational awareness.
Right.
Preston, you and I both know that no matter what you do, you need to be situationally aware. Driving a car? Yeah, exactly. You see a lot of that.
This will get you killed.
Yes. Whether you're walking, driving, or sitting in a restaurant,
yeah,
you're not situationally aware of what's going on.
Or on the bus or metro or whatever.
Now, if you want to use this device right here, what you can do is use it to check the news before you leave your house and find out what politically is going on in your neighborhood, whether it's your city, your county, parish, village, or your state. Find out what your political climate is and look at the headlines, because right now, anytime someone that is black or any minority is shot or severely injured by the police, no matter what the case may be, the media drags that out into the limelight before the facts of any case is ever presented and gets everybody riled up. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the rallying point behind Antifa and BLM, is everything's racist. Everything's racist. Well, if you happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, when some of these protests, these so-called peaceful protests, go awry and they become violent from the agitators, you need to know what's going on. You need to be prepared. So number one, be situationally aware.
Yeah.
See if there's anything brewing politically. Check your national and local news. And if you are around or are in a mass event, such as a concert, festival, or, you know, especially a sporting event, any place where there's alcohol, concerts, you know, there's drugs, things that could alter people's mind, guess what? It could create a mass chaos situation real quickly in a crowded area. Mm-hmm. You see this a lot of times on Super Bowl championships when the team wins, and soccer games in Europe and stuff, that when those teams win, everyone goes out and celebrates and parties. Next thing you know, they're burning cars, breaking windows, looting, and they're celebrating. You know, here,
yeah,
they're not celebrating here. This is not a celebration that's going on that we're seeing right now. This is anger. These are agitators trying to get people riled up.
They're professional agitators.
Yes.
They're trained to do that, and they're sprinkled throughout the crowd. There's a lot of useful idiots out there, and that's not my term. That's a communist term for these people that they convinced to come into their movement, and they don't know the real agenda of what's going on. They're just caught up, you know, like blacks who are worried about the violence, police violence against black suspects. They get emotionally charged, they get involved, and they don't understand what's actually going on at the hierarchies of these organizations. And they get put into a situation sometimes that they didn't expect.
You're right. And one of the points I have is, you know, don't be another member of the crowd. Don't fall into that herd mentality, because guess what? That is exactly what happens when you get in these crowds. People who may have good intentions that, yes, I believe in this movement, I'm going to go protest. But when their friend next to them starts yelling and hollering, and the friend next to them and the person they don't even know behind them starts chanting, and everybody, you know, starts chanting, well, guess what? That starts feeding your emotions. You know, how many times have you gone to a movie and, you know, it's a high action, high adventure. My wife hates it when I go see movies with fast cars in it, because I'm a racer at heart. You know, one of my favorite things is being a pursuit driving instructor, because I love driving on a course. So she knows that the minute we get out of the theater, she's like, oh no, you know, here you go. You're going to be apexing turns and drifting and all sorts of things, you know. So, you know, those things motivate people. They move people. It drives their emotions. So don't say that, oh, I can't get caught up in this, because you can easily get caught up with it without even knowing that you're getting caught up in it. Yeah. You know, if you find yourself in a large crowd that is suddenly turning unruly, you know, try to slowly make your way out of the crowd, evacuate or seek shelter, you know, get out of there. I want to say slowly, but as quickly as you can. And I'll talk a little bit that a minute about, you know, not wanting to run out of a crowd. Don't return back to the crowd. You know, once you exit, get the hell out of there. Don't stick around to see what's going on, no matter how tempting, no matter how, you know, exciting things may be getting, because you never know when it's going to implode around you. And the last thing you want to be is stuck in, whether it's 100 people or 100,000 people, it could be life-threatening to you. So don't, no matter what the temptation, don't sit there and film it. Don't be that person that's got their live feed going, and because you're just complicating the problem. And remember, not everyone keeps a cool head. This goes back to those professional agitators too. Mm-hmm. You know, they know how to drive at people's emotions. They can get a crowd riled up, adding fuel to that fire. And, you know, there's also those people that overreact to everything. And that can cause similar reactions. You know, we're going back to when Trump first got election, during his first election, when he got elected. And, you know, a lot of the people I worked with at the time were very far left, and they were having meltdowns. They were crying, and one would start crying and the other would start crying. Next thing you know, I had a room with three or four people crying because of the election. That just shows how people feed off others' emotions.
Yeah.
And the same thing will happen here. If you start people overreacting, yelling, screaming, you get someone that has the same emotional issues as that person, guess what they're probably going to start doing? Before you know it, it's like a crying baby in a daycare. Everyone's going to be crying. Yep. And there's not going to be anyone there to wipe away the tears. So, you know, that's a similar concept.
Yeah.
Get out of the crowd. Don't be part of that crowd. Get out and keep a low profile. You know, again, as I mentioned before, you want to get out of that crowd, but do so in a manner that draws the least attention. You don't want that spotlight drawn on you. Quietly walk out towards the perimeter of the crowd and try to find a side street to exit and get as far away as possible. And again, if you can't get to your vehicle and get a safe route out of there, try to find a good place to shelter in. Stay away from businesses with glass windows. Try to find some place that you can literally kind of bunker down into. And you may have to get a little creative and squeeze into some places and stuff, but you want to get out of sight. You want to find shelter. Literally, it's a storm brewing, and you want to get out of the path of that storm.
Yeah.
So yeah. What if you're in a car? And we're seeing this more and more of people being caught in the middle of spontaneous riots. And, you know, I always hate it when you hear people, oh, well, they shouldn't have been there. They shouldn't have been driving through that crowd. Well, you know what? These crowds, these riots, these protesters, these agitators, they're not going out and getting parade permits. They're not getting with the local government and getting streets properly blocked off to stop traffic. No, they're just taking over the streets. These are public thoroughfares that the laws give motor vehicle traffic the right of way. And they think, I'm sorry, but I know I cannot stop a 4,000-pound car by myself. Five people can't stop a 4,000 pound car by themselves, yet they think they can. But here's the deal. If you are able to, and you can get to your car, first of all, turn around, you know, lock your doors, roll your windows up. Also know the features of your car. There are some cars that if you put it in a park, if you have it set correctly, it'll unlock the doors automatically.
Yeah.
This happened several years ago on a cartel hit on some officials in Mexico. I don't know if you remember that. It actually made national news. When they stopped at the roadblock, they put the car in park and it popped the doors open, popped the doors lock open. Yeah. So be
they
aware.
Blocked them in.
Yep.
They boxed them.
Yep.
Right on the street. Actually,
and despite their vehicle being somewhat IH-35, armored.
IH-35, right in the heart of Laredo.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, you got to be aware of what your vehicles do if you put them in park, if you turn the ignition off. I have auto lock turn on all mine. So the minute I put it in gear, it locks all the doors, but I turn the auto unlock off for that very reason. Because if I get stopped and I got to put it in park or I got to turn the ignition off, I don't want my doors automatically popping open and somebody can get in. So another thing too is if you make it to your vehicle to make a safe escape, you know, turn your radio to a local news station, but turn the radio down. You know, you want to be able to hear what's going on, and probably AM stations are the best one to get your news because you still have talk radio, a lot of talk radio on the AM dial. So you want to try to find out what's going on because a lot of times the local media will be broadcasting something, especially if some kind of major unrest goes on. But keep the volume low because you want to be aware of what's going on. Go ahead. Yeah.
I want to make a comment about a tire. Make sure that you have shoes. You don't want to be walking around in flip-flops and get stuck someplace where you gotta get out of there quickly. You're going to be blowing out your flips and you're going to be barefoot, and that's going to be a very challenging situation. So
you're right, especially if there's glass and projectiles,
rocks,
being all
especially, you know, let's say you have to use some force to get away. It's not going to be easy in flip-flops or barefoot, especially if they got boots and stuff. So you're going to be at a disadvantage.
Yeah. I always, and this is the safety manager, risk manager in me, you know, always wear closed-toed shoes, lace up if possible. Going back to the vehicle, you know, situational awareness, keep the volume down in your car low. My dad, of course, growing up, you know, back in carbureted vehicles that, you know, were noisy, shook, smoked, you know, clanked and cluttered, he would always keep a window crack down. And, you know, that was the cop in him too. And he told me, he said, you know, he used to do that on patrol. That way he could hear things.
Yeah.
And today's modern vehicles are so well sound deadened that if you roll the windows up, you can't even hardly hear an emergency vehicle with the siren on behind you. So I always keep my windows cracked, and this is helpful because, you know, there's flash mobs. We think about flash mobs, oh, they're going to break out in song and dance. No, that's not the case anymore. They're using the same apps, highly secured apps, in fact, to organize these flash agitators is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, you may be thinking you're getting out of the main group and you may be heading into a secondary or third group. So keep those windows down so you can hear for chanting and yelling and screaming. You know, don't go toward the sounds of people yelling. It's usually not a good thing. You want to get away from that.
Yeah.
And find an alternate route.
Yeah.
Again, if you see a crowd forming ahead, don't try to drive through it. Try to avoid that area if you can. And if you're in a situation where you can turn around where there's not a lot of traffic, you know what? I've got some mad backing skills. I can back pretty fast down several blocks if I had to. I've had to do it before. And, you know, get the hell out of Dodge. Don't sit around. Don't say, oh, well, it's a small crowd. I think we can make it through, because they may not want you to go through. Chances are they're not going to let you through.
Right.
So, you know, divert, finding another route, have plan B. Something, especially if you go in the city. I go into Austin now maybe once or twice a month. To go eat at a nicer restaurant than we have around here, and just to get out of the area and you know, again, situational awareness for me, I still want to go around and see what's happening in these cities in safer locations. But when I go, number one, I always plan alternate routes to get back. Mm-hmm. I know several highways, several farm to market roads, and even some residential and county roads that if I had to, and it may be 40 miles out of the way, but I can get back home without having to take an area where a major or majority of the population is driving, because you're going to find out that most people only know one way home, to and from, and they're only going to take that route. So if you can find the route less traveled, that it's going to be better for you.
That's right.
You know, driving through the crowd too, you know, it's going to be a judgment call. If all of a sudden you get a flash mob around you and you got no place to go and they start breaking windows and you've got kids in your car and they're trying to grab people and pull you out, you know what? You got to use your best option. That is, again, be situational aware. For me, I'm going to do what I can to protect myself and my kids. If I think serious bodily injury or death, guess what? That 4,000-pound car is probably going to go through that crowd because I'm going to get out of there. Again, they don't have the right to be there. If they're not legally assembled and peacefully assembled, they don't have the right to be there. And I have the right to get out of there to protect my life and protect my family's life.
So just
be aware of that. Again, everything's a case-by-case situation. And don't rely on technology to get you out of trouble. Don't rely on this thing right here, okay? Because number one, smartphones have the driving apps. Most of those are based on either cell phone or Wi-Fi triangulation. There are some phones that have a true GPS receiver in them. But by and large, most of your, especially your cheaper phones, are going to be triangulating off of your cell towers. Mm-hmm. And what happens when your cell towers go down? All of a sudden, you're just a little dot that's not moving anywhere.
Yeah.
Our lost connection is what you're going to get. Yeah. And you know what? There is no get me out of here function on most maps that I've seen. They're going to tell you the common ways to get out of something. And again, this is where you've got to be able to know the way. Now, if your phone isn't able to give you a route out, you can still use your map, zoom in and try to find auxiliary roads, because those will still show up on maps. It may not route you those ways, but those are something you can still use to get you out of the situation, even if you're on foot. You know, also often during larger events, you're going to find that your cell service is compromised, especially these spontaneous events. When you get to large pre-planned events where they're thinking, you know, Austin, South by Southwest, one of the huge festivals they have every year and brings hundreds upon hundreds, if not almost a million people by the time the whole show is over with, you know, a week or two later. I remember when that first started, when they started getting the big concerts and stuff, we started losing cell service because they were compromising, they were overloading the cell towers.
Yeah.
So now they pre-plan, they get with the providers and they bring out what they call CALs. Our cellular on wheels, the little portable cellular stations. You don't have this in these protests. You don't have these in these riots. Right. You know, this is not it may be pre-planned for the rioters, but the government's not planning for this. They're not providing for, you know, extra infrastructure for your cell phone. So you may not have a cell phone to use. And if that's the case, sometimes if you're lucky, you can use text messaging if you need a message, family members or someone to get you help. But I also recommend turning off your Wi-Fi, turning off your Bluetooth, because that's going to save your battery power, because you don't know how long it's going to be before either you get back to a vehicle, get back to someplace that has power. And, you know, depending on the situation, you may not have power to begin with. That may be what causes the civil unrest. Mm-hmm. So you got to be prepared for that. And most people don't know what a paper map is anymore.
Right. I always do a map recon. If I've gone somewhere, I check out my Google Maps. I zoom in, take a look at it, and I'll turn on the satellite view so I can actually see the real land there and see what it looks like or what it looked like at one point. And when I went down to the 2A rally in Richmond in January, I did exactly that, and I found a great place to park. I went there early in the morning, and guess what? It was there exactly as planned. So that was great. Had a short walk, and it was a brisk morning, but it was good.
I would rather walk a mile. Huh? I would rather be able to walk a mile and get out of somewhere than
that was the plan too.
Yes.
Walk, have it parked outside of the zone of control that would have been held down if something had happened.
Yeah, but, I'm the type of person that when I go to a rodeo or a concert, when I used to go to concerts, you know, I would go park the farthest portion of the parking lot near the street. That way, if I had to, I could jump a curb and I can get out of there if I have to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. I'll always have plan B.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, talk about next is staying calm. And this kind of goes back to situational awareness. If you have good situational awareness, you have a plan, you rehearse that plan, whether it's physically or mentally, you do your own tabletop exercise in your head. You need to stay calm. And this is true for all situations. I don't care if it's civil unrest or a medical emergency at your own home. Cool heads are going to prevail. I talked about emotion, you know, spreading like wildfire. You get people right up, you get these agitators in there. Again, you need to maintain a cool head, okay? You may be with a group that have the same mindset and the same political views, and, you know, they may be getting riled up, but try not to fall into that either, because someone in that group needs to be level-headed in case the shit hits the fan. So this is kind of counterintuitive. So if trouble happens, and you see cops, riots and civil unrest is one of the few times where you want to probably stay away from cops and other first responders. And again, this seems counterintuitive, but remember, in a riot or civil unrest, cops are trained to respond differently. They're not there to be officer friendly.
That's right.
They're going to treat everybody as a threat. And if you come up running up to them, hands up or whatever the case, you know, remember, they don't know who the enemy is. They don't know if it's a setup, if it's an ambush. And if you're coming up there and you have an IED or you're going to throw chemical on them, because that's another wonderful Antifa tactic, is go up there, yell at the cops and stuff, and have someone throw some kind of chemical in their face. Mm-hmm. You know, so they're not going to play around.
Or urine bombs.
Urine bombs, feces mm-hmm. bombs. I mean, mm-hmm. some of the stuff they do is outrageous. It takes a sick mind to do some of the stuff that they do. So if you need to get the hell out of Dodge, remember I talked a little bit earlier about, you know, be calm, be inconspicuous, don't try to draw attention to yourself, try to walk out of the crowd, don't run. Even when things are getting very dangerous, walking out of that situation is much better than running. And there's a couple of reasons for this. Number one, running down an alley, a side street, or even the main street may get other rioters thinking that, well, something else is going on that they don't see, and they want to be part of the action. They may think, oh, you know what, Preston, I see Preston running down the street. He must be chasing after somebody that did something, so let's go see what Preston's doing. Or the other thing, number two, is just as hikers and campers are told, don't run from predators. Why is that? You grew up in Oregon. That was your boyhood home. Why don't you run away from bears?
Because they think you're food.
Yes, it excites their prey drive. Well, guess what?
Yeah. Just like a dog. If you run from a dog, he'll chase you and get you too.
So the same theory holds true. You know, running is a literal fight or flight response. And during mass confusion, agitators may actually believe that you just did something to upset their cause. So you either got people that are going to think, oh, you're going to go kick somebody's butt, or you're running so you can go chase somebody down so they're going to follow you, or they see you running, they may think that you're there, you did something to their organization, and you're trying to get out of there because you're trying to create a melee for them. So it's kind of the prey drive. As a canine handler, a former canine handler, you know, that's something you look in an aggressive canine is their prey drive. Going after that Kong ball that they're going after, you know.
Yeah.
Let's face it, humans, at the end of the day, biologically speaking, we are an animal species. We still have a lot of our animal instincts in us to include that prey drive, especially on those predators.
We have two eyes facing forward. That's an indication of a predator.
Yes. And remember, according to some people, we're top of the food chain.
Yep.
So if you're the weaker, if you're not the alpha, are at least the one that thinks they're the alpha, is going to try to be dominant over you. And that's so right. Keep that in mind, that that group, and that's exactly what we're seeing here from the left, is they're trying to play the alpha card here. One of the last things I'm going to leave with is firearms. You know, both of us are very adamant Second Amendment protectors. We believe solely in our Constitution, but I want to just take a moment to talk about using and displaying a firearm, especially in civil unrest. You know, I carried a gun. I still carry a gun in law enforcement. Most of my career, it was on the outside of my hip where everybody could see it in a uniform, or even when I was plain clothes, you know, when I was a state investigator, you know, we still wore a badge, people who knew who we were. Mm-hmm. When I got home, that gun came off my hip, or at least visibly came off my hip. Once I changed clothes, I went back into my civilian mode. You know, if you're in a protest, I know there's a lot of them out there, a lot of people that are open carrying rifles, open carrying pistols. You know, that's great. But I think now we're starting to get into a situation. A lot of people, you see a Second Amendment advocate and they automatically say, oh, well, that's a right winger. That must be a conservative because they got a gun. Well, what are we seeing now?
Yeah.
We're seeing all of a sudden the John Brown Club, you know, the left's gun club, which funny thing is you never hear anything about them being, you know, gun nuts and instigators.
The Socialist Rifle Association or something like that.
Yeah.
RSA. Yeah. They're out there and, they're growing in numbers. As a matter of fact, they're receiving specialized training and, you know, they're acting up. They're preparing, and so should you. I'm talking about you out there, my friends. You should be prepared as well. You know, it, whether you like guns or not, guns are an equalizer. And if you own a gun, you should be training with it. Right now, it's an expensive proposition. I'm going to be going through a course here in a week or two, about 2 weeks, and I'm going to expend 150 rounds of 5.56, 223, and I'll tell you, those rounds are like gold right now. They're, you know, they're not cheap.
I had to go qualify here a couple of weeks ago for my annual firearms qualifications in law enforcement, and I had some old ammo and it needed to be shot up. I mean, some of the stuff was 20 years old.
Oh, I've got some like that.
And even though it was stored properly, it functioned flawlessly. So it kind of also, you know, kind of let me see, you know, was this ammo still capable of firing? Cause I still have a cache of it. But as I'm pulling the trigger, I'm thinking, oh, there goes 75 cents, you know,
cause
it's hard to come by, you know, you cannot find it in our area whatsoever.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know,
it's hard.
There's kind of that combination of, you know, you need to train, you need to do some live fire, but remember, there's also dry fire drills you can do. But get
safely,
that training
safely. Please.
Yes, please. You know, if you're new to firearms, and even if you're an experienced firearms person, you know, stop, remember, slow it down, be safe, remember muzzle discipline, treat all guns if they're loaded, because the last thing we want is somebody getting shot or killed because they're trying to clear their home with what they think is an unloaded gun. So make sure you do it in a safe place. But let me talk a little bit about too, and this is, I guess, more of a pet peeve of mine for those people that open carry. Again, I'm an open carry advocate. I don't personally open carry with few exceptions. But if you open carry and you're going to go to a protest, and I'm talking about pistols here, you know, make sure you have a secured holster. I have seen plenty of open carry people that have the Yaki style holster, which is nothing more than just the piece of leather that the gun sits in. It's like, I call it a pistol taco because there's no retention straps on it.
The Yaki slide.
Yeah. The Yaki slide.
Yeah, I've got a couple of them.
You know, I do too, and depending on the situation, I may use one here and there. But by and far, you know, at the very minimum, even though they don't offer much protection from a gun grab, you know, a pinch retention holster, you know, like a Phobos brand or that style holster, the Kydex holster, something that at least if you get knocked to the ground, your pistol is not going to go flying the other direction. The other thing too, right, is if you're in a large crowd and you're open carrying and that crowd gets heavier and heavier around you, thicker and thicker, you know, if no one, if you don't know how a pickpocket works, what they do is they usually work in groups. They have somebody that bumps into you to distract your attention as they're picking the pocket at the same time. Well, the same thing can happen if you're not carrying a properly holstered gun or a properly secured pistol, is someone can just as easily grab a gun out of your holster without you knowing it. And I know there's people watching the show right now that are going, oh no, that's never going to happen to me. That's never going to happen to me. Well, you get in a crowd like that, and I guarantee you that if someone wants your pistol bad enough, they're going to get it.
Oh yeah.
He was 12 at the time, my son. We were standing in a restaurant and there was a gentleman that was open carrying, and he was carrying one of these level zero holsters, you know, no retention device. It was the Yaki slide style. And he taps me on the shoulder and says, "Daddy, what keeps me from going up and grabbing that guy's gun before he can even reach for it?" This is a 12-year-old thinking this, mm-hmm, you know? And I talked to him, "Well, nothing, son." You know, it's something that if a 12-year-old is thinking about, what do you think those protesters are going to be doing, those rioters are going to be doing if you're caught in the middle of one of their riots and they realize that you are not friendly?
Well, you know, carrying a weapon takes another level of pre-planning and preparation. And it's something that you really have to do a lot of work on. You know, I've carried a gun every day of my life for
30
some odd years now, you know. I can't even think of how many years it's been, but for many of those years I've carried two guns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, two pistols. I carried a backup once I was in a position where I was able to, I was authorized to, and I still do today. Matter of fact, I'm sitting in my bunker, my command center in Civil Defense Radio bunker here, and I've got two guns on right now. So, you know, I'm always armed. When I met my wife, I was armed every day. She never saw me without a gun. So, you know, that was a test of her too. You know, mm-hmm, is she going to freak out? Is she going to, you know, what kind of a woman is she? And she stuck with you. Yeah, she put up with me.
She has a high tolerance. That's one thing.
Yeah, right? eight years next month. So, you know, going strong. So that's good. But you know, you brought up some great points. Being watchful, being situationally aware, you have to understand where you're at, and you can't be distracted. You have to understand. And so if you're with your family or with a group of people, somebody's got to have their head on a swivel. You can't just walk along, you know, all fat and happy and not understand what's going on. You have to look around. There's just too many threats out there in today's world.
And even the best of us sometimes get distracted.
Oh yeah. 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 It happens. So, it's just one of those things that, you know, even though we get distracted, we're not distracted for long.
No,
because we've been doing it for so long. But, I want to let everybody know something here real quick. On September 4th, Zero Hedge had an article that they're not the only ones who reported this, but DHS combats potential electromagnetic pulse EMP attack. So there's been a lot of talk out there about a possible attack of some kind on our power grid. Matter of fact, a friend of mine who's in the private security industry, he asked me if I was interested in working on a DHS contract that was, you know, being negotiated, and they were going to be protecting electrical infrastructure. So, you know, if that is in fact true, then we have to really think about our preparation and not bump it up to a major degree if there's a possibility that these people, in order to win at any cost, will even go so far as to put the whole nation in peril by knocking out a portion or all of our electrical power grid. So, you know, if you take out portions of it, it puts a load on other areas, and it could have a cascading effect, and the whole thing can go down.
Well, let's take a moment real quick. You know, we're talking about how it seems like all this is planned. And you're looking at the setup for that. This is the perfect setup for the perfect storm. You know, here you've got natural disasters. You got pretty much the entire West Coast burning right now. You've got, you know, Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, these major Democrat-run cities that are just turning into total chaos, civil unrest every night, if not every other night. Every little thing is turned into something that is systemically racist, as the key term is now. Everything is systemically racist. The whole system needs to be, you know, burned down and rebuilt, so is what they're saying. So you're getting these little pockets flaring up, but it's not just one here or there, and it's becoming everywhere now. So you've got your natural disasters, you got your forest fires going on, you've got coronavirus lockdowns in these states that, you know, a lot of these governors are refusing to relent and let their people get back to work.
That's
and
right.
get back to a livelihood. Then throw the election in there. Throw Pelosi in the mix there, and the things that the Senate and the House are trying to do. The Supreme Court nomination, you know. These are all little things that, when you put them all together, they may seem trivial right now that, oh, it's just, this is a political fight. No, you put all this together, you throw in, I mean, they're already talking about election fraud, and we haven't even had an election yet.
Yeah, because they're planning on creating an election fraud in order to throw the election into chaos.
Yes. So you throw the election in chaos, you start having all of the, you know, these elements coming together. Now throw in Iran or North Korea or China or Russia or somebody that decides to do some sort of cyber attack on us.
China.
Yeah. That's already doing cyber attacks on us and have been.
Yeah.
You know, what happens when they hit the grid? Doesn't have to be an EMP. Once one good cyber attack that, you know, there's already analysts out there from a cyber attack that happened a year or two ago on the West Coast, where they found that they had infiltrated into a power plant system.
Yeah, Metcalf substation.
Yep. And created potential. And the thing is some of those bugs are still in there. There's some that they have no idea what the intent of the virus is to do, other than the fact that they know that it's seeing all the control systems for these power plants, hydroelectric dams. You know, the bugs are in there. And if you've ever had a virus on your computer at any time, you know it's almost next to impossible without formatting, rebooting, and starting everything from scratch to get that sucker completely out of there. There's always some kind of residual. And all it's going to take is one terrorist act to bring our grid down. It doesn't even have to be the entire grid. It could be California. It could be New York, or it could be both. But as you mentioned, it's even something as a large substation going down, if you're in an energy crisis, that it can create a cascading effect and can trigger ultimately a nationwide power emergency.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
So the perfect storm is brewing, my friend, and we really need to watch our six on this, because this isn't going to get better before it gets worse.
No, no. Matter of fact, there's a lot of reporting out there that says that within a week at least before the election and way after, they're going to be looking to throw us into chaos. And we're going to be talking about that probably on our next show. Any final words there, partner?
No, as you hear often, you know, keep the powder dry, watch your six.
Okay. Well, civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. And also be sure to check out our new YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast and our Facebook and Twitter at Civil Defense Radio. And Twitter is civil_def_radio. And I wish to thank Matt for being my new long-term co-host. And I wish to thank you, our friends and listeners who are with us on a regular basis.